Now, Podcast One brings you Spike's Car Radio, a downloadable cars and coffee hosted by writer, comedian, and automotive enthusiast Spike Ferriston. Now, here's Spike.
All right, here we are, Spike's Car Radio. We have another car-y Christmas episode. I don't know, when is this show airing? Do we know? When do we want it to air?
Let me go through the calendar.
These guys have a new show, so they're probably going to want to promote it.
Before January, ideally.
That show is called Everyday Driver, and their second season premiere is on Velocity Channel January 6th. What time do you guys go on?
That's right.
Early. 7:30 in the morning. We're part of that early morning independent producers block, so early, early. Set your DVR.
I always get excited when I see the second season, because that's the big season. It's not the first season of television. Yeah. It's the second.
Yeah.
You make it to number two, you're doing okay,
first
right?
First season, you stumble across the finish line, for sure.
I'm here with Todd Deacon and Paul Schmucker. And these guys, if you don't know them, you know, a lot of people who are listening to me are Porsche folks. And you guys aren't necessarily Porsche folks. I know you've done a lot of Porsche content.
Yes, we have.
And we'll get to it.
I admit to being the Porsche super freak of the two of us.
That's for sure. That's
Todd
for
is
sure.
into Lotus. So, you know, we all have our thing. Yeah. Todd is a Lotus guy.
We're just going to focus on Todd then, because he's the Porsche super freak. But let's just first talk about the show. I mean, I love your whole story here as I'm reading through it. You guys had a YouTube channel that's very successful, right? Everyday Driver, is that what you called it?
Everyday Driver. Yeah,
yeah. And you somehow parlayed that into a television show.
Yes and no. See, here's the thing. we didn't set out to be on YouTube. A decade ago, which is shocking to think
that
it's that long.
Which I can't believe, actually.
Yeah, it's frightening.
Wow.
10 years ago.
Yeah, we actually shot a half-hour TV pilot. We shot it in late 07.
For who?
Total Spec
yeah,
TV pilot.
Yeah, this is us.
And shopped it in 08.
So you guys got out your cameras and said, we're going to make a TV show.
Yep, exactly.
Well, it was one of those things. We had to figure out what it was going to be and what it was not going to be. Because everybody has suggestions on what they think you should go drive.
Yeah. Yes.
You guys should do classic cars. You guys should do whatever. And then we had to back up and think, okay, what is this going to look like?
But was this completely out of the blue? Was it based on the stuff you were already doing on YouTube? What were you guys doing at that moment where you said, let's shoot a car pilot?
Well, we were actually working. We'd done a few little test shoots working to try to do a half-hour pilot. I wasn't thinking about doing a web show. I came out of the film industry, was thinking about doing a TV pilot.
Right.
So we actually shot a couple little test things with our own cars, with a couple buddies' cars, just to go, okay, well, how would this be done?
Mm-hmm.
And then we actually went out, spent some money, and shot a half-hour TV pilot that we shopped in 08, and were promptly met with the same conversation over and over, which is, guys, this is really cool. We like this. Nobody's buying. Because the economy had been chopped off at the knees, and nobody was buying a thing. So now we had content, had to figure out where it goes, and that's when we kind of fell to YouTube. And right about that time, YouTube was starting the partner program, where they were going, we have more than cat videos. Let's try to put some ads in front of things. And they reached out to us. So we were in the beta part of the partner program at what now feels like the dark ages of YouTube.
Yeah.
Was that when
they were throwing like $5 million at everybody just to make content? No, that was studio deals.
We would have loved $5 million thrown at us.
That didn't happen.
Seriously, that was like 2010, 2011 is when they did that. Mm-hmm. That was when they had their original programming thing that only lasted a year.
Well, now there's a second good thing that came out of the big crash of 2008. I was watching a documentary on Netflix last night. Bitcoin came out of that as well. That's when Bitcoin suddenly popped. So we have Bitcoin and
I did not get
drivers.
In early enough on the Bitcoin.
That's right.
Yeah.
Wait. As long as Bitcoin stays cool and doesn't crash.
That's what I did last night. I spent a good 2 hours putting myself down for not buying Bitcoin in 2008 when it was 0.00016.
And everybody went, what is this thing?
I'm still asking, what is this thing and how I can profit.
That's true.
You know, every once in a while you see that little stat. If you had just put $5 down in 2008, you'd be a billionaire.
Bought Amazon at, you know, whatever, $20.
I remember my assistant back in the day coming up and going, you really got to buy this Google. Who's telling you that? My dad. Where does he work? Oh, Wall Street. Yeah, I'm not buying Google. I don't even know what that is.
What is Google?
He goes, get in on Google, dude. Get in on Google.
Funny.
I have a long history of not doing things like that.
Funny.
Anyway, let's get back to your show. So you make this pilot. It's funny because I'm laughing now because I have a production company and I have a front row seat to these networks. And, you know, we produce a lot of stuff, but also car stuff because my partner and I love it. And they're so granular on what they want. You know, they're very, very specific. And we'll go in with what we think is a home run and they just look at you and go, this is entertainment.
What are you guys
thinking? This is a car show. This is entertainment. Who do you bring it to? You know, do you have agents at that point? Do they set up a pitch?
And we
And who do you pitch?
One of our big pitches was Speed Channel, which, of course, no longer exists.
Right.
You know, but our big pitch was Speed Channel. And then, of course, in the next 2 years after we pitched to them, they kind of folded. And we went, well, kind of dodged a bullet there. And
then what's this YouTube thing again?
Yeah, and then they got a little bit resurrected as Velocity. I mean, Velocity isn't a direct correlation,
right.
but that's probably the closest thing now. Mm-hmm. But even at the time, the Speed Channel guys were like, well, you could be on in syndication. But we were like, I don't have the first idea how to start that. Fast forward, better part of 10 years, and we had a syndication company that helped us get on Velocity because now we had a bunch of back catalog to allow season one to be YouTube stuff for TV.
They love that.
Yeah. So that allowed us to actually kind of easily is too simple a word, but easily take some of the YouTube content to build season one so then we could go into season two and shoot all original for season two.
I got it. Got it.
Craziness. Yeah.
Yeah, that is craziness.
I'm living in the edit room, unless I'm here.
So what is the show? Was the pilot very much what you're doing right now?
Very much so.
In a lot of ways, yeah.
Yeah,
ways.
I mean, that first year, we really had to figure out, again, what are we going to be shooting? You know, everyday driver, what does that mean?
Yeah, is the show?
That can mean, you know, people think about Honda Accords and Toyota Corollas and that kind of thing, but that's really not the point. It's about being in LA traffic or wherever you are, every day you drive something. Generally speaking, you're in a car, drive something you really love, something that is, you know, is passionate in your heart.
Yeah.
And you go around a corner, and you find your favorite mountain road, or you're on track, or whatever that is your everyday driver, not just the kinds of not fun cars you associate with that.
Yeah.
So that's been something that we always are educating people, I feel like.
Well,
everyday driver, what is that? Is that just Honda Accords all the time? No. This is, you're in a car, so we're in a car every day, drive something you love.
And that was the other thing, is that we've all seen this. You stand at an auto show, pick your auto show, and everybody's standing around the velvet rope, staring at the Ferrari or whatever that they cannot afford.
Or the girls.
And that happens too.
Mainly.
And then they shuffle off to the car they hate. And it was trying to merge those two realities. Okay, you have a real budget, real life, kids, commute, whatever it is.
All right.
Let's put you in a car that you really like that does all the stuff you need it to do. And what's been interesting is the show is kind of focused on anything generally about under 60 grand. Now, that could be used under 60 grand, but cars roughly under 60 grand. Of course, we still get in the exotics because why wouldn't we? But generally,
right.
that's
we
the
focus. We still like that stuff
too. The podcast is entirely people writing to us and saying, hey, I've got this amount of money and I'm looking for this. I mean, you were on it with us and we were chasing a car for a guy with all of our info. So we get to be much more specific on the podcast than we do, obviously, for the TV show.
Right.
But it's all that same premise of, you know, you're in a car every day, drive something you love.
Yeah.
And what is the format of the show now that's on Velocity? What are we seeing in season two here?
Like, 2 to 3 cars compared in a market segment. So one of our episodes is the big rivalry, the GT350R versus the Camaro ZL1. That's obviously the upper end of the budget, but that's one of them.
Isn't there a third car in that historic rivalry?
There's
the
Challenger.
Challenger.
But the Challenger isn't really in this of the same. The Challenger, honestly, is the last muscle car left.
Right.
If you think about it dynamically, the Camaro and Mustang have moved on to be much more sports cars.
Mm-hmm.
So we put the two of those together. We did the 3 affordable rear wheel drives, which is everybody thinks Miata. But you've also got Fiat 124 now and the Toyota 86.
They
They're
look
all
the
about,
same, though.
They look very similar, yeah.
They are the same.
Yeah, exactly.
How did
Pretty
those
much.
Two compare? I don't want to ruin the episode, but how did they compare? Because that Fiat, I haven't driven it yet, but it doesn't look like it's going to work right. Am I wrong about that?
I think you might want to temper that conversation. You might want to temper that thought until you see the episode. I'll say it that way.
Well, but,
because they are very different.
They are.
They
but the Miata is a long line of Miatas now.
Agreed.
They've had a time to get
car
right.
But think about, you know, weight and distribution of the roof. Mm-hmm. And, you know, now the Fiat, they actually did a different engine in that
car.
That's
the biggest difference. That's the thing that really
it's
defines
not the, same
the
motor.
Change.
Yeah.
Wow. Is that the Fiat has the motor from the Fiat, the 500 Abarth, the little turbo.
That's a nice engine.
So that engine now in the
Imagine
Miata chassis.
That
and
that.
That's what really defines the difference. If you're sitting in them, honestly, the badge on the wheel is the only way you know which car you're in.
Right.
They're identical behind the wheel. They look different out the front because the Fiat's got the long hood, and it is weird how different they feel because of the long flat hood on the Fiat. But as far as dynamics are concerned, it's that engine that makes them different. And we didn't agree. We don't agree a lot of times. We didn't agree necessarily
Naturally,
on
though.
Conclusions. But that was the thing that really – I walked them just like you, Spike. I walked them with this is exactly the same car with different badging. But that engine is the thing that kind of tweaks it for sure.
Mm-hmm. Why isn't Mazda going to do something like that? Why wouldn't they put a bigger engine in that car? And
We've
make
been
it,
asking well. For bigger engines in all of these cars, as a matter of fact. For the Toyota 86 chassis, I've been talking about power for since the car came out, I've been going back and forth. And then I drive the car and I think, okay, this is such a great chassis. I really like it. And then I think, why not just screw a turbocharger to this car?
Right.
Yeah. And it had to do, you know, along the lines with the company's themes, whereas I forget which is which. You know, Toyota was more supercharging, or it was, you know, and Subaru was more turbo.
Yeah, for sure. They
and
the
that's
history.
Sort of, this is how we've branded the companies and the performance versions. And I'm thinking, fine, that works. Put one on each and we'll call it a day. And everybody has more power. But up to this point, they haven't. Mazda hasn't done that either with the RF now. They haven't done it with anything. But there's a little turbo on that Fiat 124, and that changes the game.
It does.
I'm not trying to give away too much here, but that really does change the dynamics of these cars.
This is one of the most raced cars in the world, the Miata, right?
Exactly.
I kind of hate them, but still, you would think with that Mazda might go, hey, why don't we make something, you know, 800 of them, maybe 1,000 of them, make them special, put a roll bar, you know, do something for the guys who are
Bring
racing.
It.
Well, you know,
right?
They had that Mazda Speed version of the second gen that was a turbo version from the factory.
Yeah,
and those
that
are
is
actually
true.
Really cool. Now, unfortunately, that's the generation I fit in the least, but they were very cool to have a factory turbo on them. But now Mazda's not doing Mazda Speeds of anything.
Yeah, that's gone.
They've got a great lineup and no Mazda Speed hot versions of any of them.
I want 595 horsepower. Straight pipes on the back.
In your
Flying Miata.
Miata.
Those are the people that might be able to help you
truly
out.
Truly and crazy and insane. So wait, you guys, it says here you were roommates here in L.A.
We were. A long time ago. As a matter of fact.
A frightening amount of time ago.
It's amazing to think about.
And what was the dream here when you were in L.A.?
You know, I came out to go to Art Center College of Design here in Pasadena, as a matter of fact. That's what brought me out to design cars. So I actually have a degree and background in car design.
Wow.
Todd comes from the filmmaking and storytelling element, and that's kind of what brought us together for the show. But people were always asking us about, hey, you guys know stuff about cars. I need to go buy a new car and I don't know what I want next. Am I a truck girl? Am I a car guy? Am I what do I want? Will you come with me to the dealership and drive stuff with me? And of course we love that because we'd you know,
for sure.
The salesperson has been working for 3 weeks.
I say this. No, I won't.
It's genuinely come out of a desire to help people because people have been coming to us. And
that's
where our podcast sprang out of hey, write to us because we'd love to talk about your situation.
Yeah, that's the best way to do it. That's right.
You know, we just think it'd be fun to help people get into something they love, which definitely relates to the show. And then we think, okay, so the cars we put on camera, what would people shop? Mm-hmm. How would you compare? And that's who we're talking to. We're talking to buyers, but then there is the entertainment aspect. You know,
hopefully.
We talk about, you know, Motor Week over here. And John Davis, if you're listening, we think you're great. You know, Motor Week is a brochure.
Motor Week is a motoring brochure.
And then there's, Top Gear. Now, Grand Tour way out here at the entertainment top end. But what is in between for those of us who can't afford Ferraris or, you know, don't want to consider that. We'd rather have a McLaren or is it the greatest car ever or let's go drive it and compare it. Because so many times we'll see the article in the paper or the car magazine and think, all right, well, where was the Audi R8 in comparison? How come you guys didn't bring that along?
Right,
it's just one car that you drove and you gave your opinions about, but that's why we put these three together on camera.
That's a scheduling nightmare a lot of the time. But see, I came out to write and direct because I figured, you know, that line is short. I'll be doing that in no time.
Yeah.
Right? And wound
Nobody
up,
does that in this decade. Really?
Wound up working for a decade.
Stranger things have happened.
True. Yeah, for sure. That didn't happen. That didn't happen to me. So I wound up working for a decade. I was actually down the street from where we're recording. I was down the street here in Beverly Hills.
And what did you want? What did you want to write and direct? What was the thing that you wanted to be that you saw and you go, I want to do that? Was it like Apocalypse Now? Was it like, who did you imagine yourself?
I never saw
out here.
Like the Jim Cameron stuff.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that kind of world. Love that stuff where you have – and the closest equivalent now is like Christopher Nolan because everybody's doing the franchise stuff.
But, amazing.
But people that were doing the writer-director thing and they were telling some story that doesn't feel like anything anybody else is doing. I wanted to do that. Of course, the industry has moved farther and farther from that in many ways. But I worked for a decade for New Line Cinema in post-production. So I was dealing with delivery. And seeing that whole side, that of course nobody teaches you that until you're doing it in the trenches.
Right.
And kind of bumped into doing a car show with this guy because I finally got a car I loved, which was the Nissan 300ZX, the 1990, that I loved that car, and started finding all these great roads in LA and realized about that whole other part. I'd always owned terrible cars that just got me places and realized this whole interest. I was back to 15 again.
Right.
I was the
kid
that was reading the magazine and knew all the stats and then left all that because I never owned a cool car and realized about how cool driving could be. And then that got us talking further, and it just snowballs from there.
Yeah, it turns into a show. But that's what happens here.
Yeah, absolutely.
Everybody
comes
here with this dream, but it ricochets and then there's an inflection point, and then you find success in a different way. You know, I've heard that story over and over again.
That's
the magic of Hollywood. That's the true magic of Hollywood.
You're right. That's very true.
No, you're right.
Very few of us actually get exactly what we want.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, it's funny, you know, coming from car design and sketching cars. I mean, I don't know if you doodled cars in your math notebooks.
No, but let's back up for a second. I have a question about that.
Okay.
Is that viable? Like, you meet a guy like Freeman Thomas, who's designed the Audi TT and the new Beetle back in the day.
Yeah.
You know, and then there are the Porsche guys like Grant Larson, who did the Boxster and the Carrera GT, and Tony Hatter did the 993. Those guys have, like, cars attached to them. How realistic is it for a guy designing a car who wants to get into this, who might be listening now or going to school? Do you become part of a team that does that? Or how much of a long shot is it that you get attached to a car like that to where you get to say, I'm the guy who designed that car?
It's a very long shot, and it's also corporate because you might have a sketch and the executives say, all right, we like that sketch and we want to kind of develop that, and then we want this other designer over here who we think is kind of the up-and-coming person to be attached to that sketch even though you did it.
Right.
Because that, now they're kind of creating a thing around this car, the aura or the, you know, and there's an army of people behind the design and engineering of a car. It's not just one person, but that theme and sort of, you know, you understand here's the design brief and here's where we're taking the new whatever that is. And it might be an internal kind of thing that you don't know the backstory.
Right, right.
Now, in many cases, like the guys you've mentioned, well, they truly did that sketch and that was the genesis of that idea.
Yeah.
And then the whole company ran with it. But of course, there's a million people behind them, you know, actually developing the car, doing the clay, finishing off the proportions. It's just sort of like the Frank Gehry, I did the sketch and I crumpled up the piece of paper and there's your new museum. There you go. Not quite in the car design world, but yes. And so I'm very much
that
attracted me to it. But here I am now getting to drive all these cars that I looked at, you know, I was designing, and you take out design elements and all this stuff. And so that's why I'm so heavy into the styling and design, and it's why we buy the things we do.
Are you really that patient, though, to sit with a car for that long? Like, how many, you know, the longest project I ever worked on that was fun, but I couldn't stand the distance from the beginning of the writing to the finished product
was making
B-movie, an animated movie.
Oh, sure.
Where it was 3 or 4 years of looking at this thing, right?
And at one point, you wanted to just be done.
My personality, like, I come from Saturday Night Live and monologues with David Letterman, and I like to read it, write it, and then be done with it and forget about it.
Sure, right?
On to the next.
Do you have that personality where you can sit and look at a car and really sit with it for years? Like, from paper to product, how long is that?
Nowadays, it's 18 months, which is fast for
car developers. Wow.
It used to be the 3 to 4 to 5 years
What does it cost to come up with a new model?
Oh, man. It depends on if you're using an existing chassis, which is why, you know, we always want to know, where did this new car come from?
Right.
That we're driving. Is it something else, the underpinnings of something remaining left over, or is it truly a new design?
Right.
We've got an Alfa Giulia, the TI, as our car that we're driving around LA in. That's a brand new design. That's not based on anything.
And
there are many cars. We like the car a lot.
We've driven the Quadrifoglio before, which is really impressive, but it's nice to be in the lesser version and still enjoy it.
You know what's funny about that car? Everybody started calling me about it when the prices went down for them. And it's suddenly, hey, this is really cheap to lease this car.
Cheap
for LA.
Should I do this?
Should I do it? I'm like, I don't know. I haven't driven it yet, but every time I see one, I watch it go down the highway. My head turns. So you guys are giving it a thumbs up.
We like it.
It's cool. It's cool. I mean, so many times I feel like the lesser model, you just kind of go, you can't get the low one. You can't get that.
This
has got 280
Spend
horsepower.
Spend the money. Get
it's
there
got the go. Turbo. It actually is surprisingly light on its feet, and it has the same ridiculously quick steering rack as the big boy.
Oh, wow.
So it still feels really light on its feet, which is cool.
Yeah, well, look at you guys.
Just means you can get into a parking space quicker.
Yes.
Because you need to in LA.
Yes.
That's what it's all about.
Where are you guys based?
We're up in Park City, just to the east of Salt Lake, so where Sundance
Film
Festival is.
So you're in Utah.
Is.
We are.
Oh, Utah, I've got a bunch of questions for you when we're done about skiing. I've got to get the clan up there skiing.
You've got to come on
it's
out.
Awesome. Harder it's awesome. And harder to find a place up there all of a sudden.
The time to ski is during Sundance because everybody's in town watching movies. That's and the
there's no place
empty.
To stay. There's no
that's,
place
no,
to
that's true.
That
is the downside.
You can't find any place to stay, but we'll get there. What do you drive up there? What are your daily drivers?
Got a Jeep Grand Cherokee currently right now, so that's the bomb around ski car. Right. It's also serves a little bit of a production vehicle, so when we're shooting in Utah.
Mm-hmm.
And then I also own a 2015 Porsche Cayman GTS.
There you go.
Which I love. It's an event car. Every time I drive that, it's a special drive to me. I love it.
On those roads, too, which are amazing.
Yeah.
Do you have to put that car away?
You know, people have been asking me, hey, are you going to get winter tires and, you know, the 18s and do the Blizzaks?
Yeah, you're going to wreck it.
Well, we have the Great Salt Lake in Utah, and they put salt on the roads. And
much
you
salt.
Have to come to a – you have to reconcile that. Am I going to subject my car to the salt? I have decided no, but I will get it out on cold, clear days – because it still has the performance tires on it, the Goodyear Eagle F1s that are bricks when it's cold.
Yeah.
But I will get it out, you know, just
50-degree
you know,
bluebird
take baby
days
out.
In the winter. Yeah,
get her
sure.
out for a little bit because the roads are dry. But in general, the Jeep is the bomb around car. And
you're not
going
to strap a Christmas tree to it and take
no, even though that would be a good,
that
good
would
photo.
Be, yeah. For sure.
Exactly.
That would missed opportunity there.
And what about you?
My family car, my wife loves it. We have a 2010 Cayenne.
Oh,
that we love. That's been
there
a great family car.
But so you guys are both Porsche guys. What are we talking about here?
Yes, but you don't realize how much this guy backstrokes in the pool of Porsche.
Yes.
It's all Porsche all the time.
I paddle around.
Place to pool to be in, actually. I don't know why you wouldn't be there.
I'm sold
summer,
for here.
This past summer, I sold my daily FRS that I was driving year-round.
Oh, wow.
Winter tires. And, mm-hmm. drove all, and what was funny is I'd pull up in that car in the winter. People were like, I didn't know those were all-wheel drive. No, it's not.
Yeah,
and I'm fine
with
it. So I drove that year-round. I mean, it's a $20,000 Toyota. I drove it year-round. Who cares?
Exactly.
This summer, I sold that and got a car I'd wanted forever. I got a 2006 Lotus Elise, which I'm in love with. Did not want to drive that all winter.
No.
So I found the world's cleanest $5,000 05 Mini Cooper as the winter car.
Wow, there you go.
So I'm thrilled.
We have to tease Todd because his dad had a Jag E-Type as he was growing up. And he also lived in England as part of his childhood.
Yeah.
And here he is owning a Lotus Elise, British car, mm-hmm. and a Mini Cooper, British
not
car.
Not sure how this happened.
And, you know, even though the Mini is German underneath, and his wife has the Cayenne. So, you know, it's just...
yeah, somehow I'm obsessed with small British cars. I don't
it's
really
interesting,
know where
though.
That
I think it really works, though. I think, you know, it kind of all comes
he
together.
He looks happy.
Yeah.
He's very
you guys,
happy.
It's the same. This is you're saying all the same things that, you know, I was thinking about when I started Car Matchmaker, which were this simple idea of being happy in your car. I remember when I moved out here from New York, I had $2,500. That was my budget for a car.
Okay.
And I bought a 68 Cougar XR7 convertible.
Wow.
With just the ribs for the cabriolet roof. It had no
you
fabric.
You could have put a roof on it.
I say, that's a light car.
It had some rips and stuff.
The optional roof. Got it.
And I was in love. I was so happy. It was white, not really the best color for that car, and a black ripped interior
no
with
kidding.
Broken radio. And I could not have been happier. I just put on a pair of sunglasses.
Nice.
A cigar in my mouth, and I drive to work. And right? And you're happy.
Wasn't that true? It's the car and the sunglasses you own in L.A., and it's the handbag and the shoes you wear in New York. Is that true?
Well, it was just this. You know, I'm an East Coaster, so I'm used to the cold. This whole idea, I couldn't stand living in apartments anymore. I was in an apartment in Boston and an apartment in New York for like decades.
Mm.
And I wanted. I met this girl. I said, let's just move to L.A. She said, what are you going to do? I go, I don't know. Let's just go. They sold everything.
How long ago was this?
This is a while ago. This is when I came out and started working
on
Seinfeld.
1 or 2 years?
1995.
Okay.
Wow.
Right. Yeah.
But I had no job. I had a little bit of money. I'd been on Letterman for 5 years. And I met this pretty girl. I go, you want to go? She goes, sure. She goes, well, can we get a dog? And I go, absolutely. I go, we're going to get a dog. We're going to get a couple cars. And she goes, what are we going to do? I go, I don't know, but I know it's going to be great. We're going to get a house.
I love it.
Came out to L.A. Right after the earthquake.
Mm-hmm.
Not the L.A. it is right now. It was not as successful as it is right now. We're in the New Yorkification part of L.A. right now. Mm. L.A. was deserted when I came to L.A.
Yeah.
And you look around the neighborhood and you go, which house do you want? Which do you to rent? And you go, oh, that one was the one you said was Gary Cooper's house. Yeah, I'll take that house. Like, all right, it was $2,500 a month. And we go, great. All right, that's cool. It's cheaper than my New York apartment. Let's
sure.
do
wow.
that.
Sure it was, yeah.
2-car garage, get a dog. You know, you're happy. You're just happy. Happy. And the
awesome.
Cars were a big part of that. I had a couple of buddies from Letterman who had moved out here. They were gearheads. One of my friends had an old Corvette. I think it was a 68 Corvette convertible, white too, with a broken, that same sort of convertible roof.
Same top supplier? Got it. Okay.
Yeah, and we were in heaven. And you know, Car Matchmaker kind of, it was born out of that moment. Like,
sure.
you know, you don't have to have a lot of money. Like you're saying, to
sure.
drive something and to have a good time and to be, you know, a car guy and feel like you're part of the thing.
Well, right? That's our whole point. And, you know, we lament the sort of the death of manual transmissions. I know we're all seeing this kind of creep through the industry. And I maintain that in the future, car manufacturers will build the autonomous egg with the latest tech and a manual transmission 4-cylinder
yes.
convertible and thusly let it be so. That will be the car range. Everything
in
between.
Nothing in the middle, yeah.
I mean, are these the kind of cars that you still wish you had back, you know, I wish I had my first car kind of thing? I mean,
yeah.
is it kind of like that, just
what's,
to remind
what's
you
What's your
that?
Daily now?
I don't have a daily in the classic sense of a daily, so
okay.
it's really whatever kind of sparks my mood. Right
okay.
today,
it's a good problem to have.
I'm in
like,
my
yeah.
Range Rover Sport,
oh,
my
really?
Brand
okay.
new Range Rover Sport.
Okay.
Because I'm going to be bouncing around. There's going to be a lot of kid stuff. I've got four
sure.
pitches today.
Oh, yeah. Gotcha.
And I
yeah.
would like to have my wits about me. I'll tell you the downside I've been experiencing with that car. We've got to take a break in a second. But I get sized up as a certain kind of driver in that truck.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, yeah.
And
sure.
More often than not, I'll kind of look up at a stoplight and look next to me, and there'll be someone there flipping me off. And I'm like, huh,
seriously,
what was that? And, you know, if they
yeah.
roll their window down, they go, you were a little too close to me. You know, I ride that suspension up really high on it.
Sure.
I like that. I like it being up and big. And
sure,
people,
of course.
You know, and it starts fights, which I don't like. I like to be loved in traffic, and then –
Is that a setting on the Range Rover, the you know, the low, medium snow and starts the fight
yeah,
setting?
Yeah, there's
here?
A fight setting. This the upper button.
Right,
exactly.
Missed that.
What I figured out is the headlights are right in the rearview mirror of the other guy.
Gotcha.
And they think I'm doing something when in reality I'm listening to Howard Stern or trying to return an email or something.
Of course.
Funny.
And I have that. My GT3, my 991 GT3.
Ooh, yeah.
That's a
yeah.
real easy daily driver. And, you know, now that things are slowing down for the holidays, I'm going to do the Speedster. I've got the 58
oh,
Speedster
cool.
in the garage.
Oh, wow,
excellent.
Gorgeous.
And I'm really going to run around as much as I can. The kids always ruin that because you can't put them in a Coke can with no safety. But
yeah, that's a concern.
About
I will
that.
Do as much as I can in that car.
You can do that in December in L.A. That's a car you can drive.
Yeah.
yeah. yeah.
You can
not,
Christmas shop in your shorts.
Yeah. Not to make anybody
you can.
Not to make anybody feel bad. It was 80 degrees yesterday, and
Man.
It was sunny, and it was beautiful.
Yeah.
We'll be right back with more of the guys from Everyday Driver. Let's talk about AMSOIL. You know why I like AMSOIL? Because they're a bunch of car people. They're gearheads. They're into all kinds of power sports, and basically they get it. Recently, AMSOIL created the guide to increasing horsepower in your vehicle. It has insider tips from some of the best in the business on coaxing more power out of your engine. And who doesn't want that? You can get your copy free at AMSOIL.com/spike. That's my last name, AMSOIL.com/spike. While there, find out more about AMSOIL's synthetic motor oil, too. Like how AMSOIL Signature Series synthetic motor oil delivers 75% more engine protection against horsepower loss and wear than required by a leading industry standard. Go to AMSOIL.com/spike to get your free insider's guide to increasing horsepower.
Hi, this is Ben Domenech, the host of the Federalist Radio Hour. We're a daily show coming to you 5 days a week from Washington, D.C., where we interview our nation's top journalists, politicians, authors, chefs, economists, entertainers, and more. If you're looking for a contrarian discussion on news, politics, or culture, give us a listen and subscribe at PodcastOne.com, the new Podcast One app, or at Apple Podcasts.
You're listening to Spike's Car Radio.
Welcome back to Spike's Car Radio. I guess this is going to be our holiday show, Will. Do you have any jingle bells you could put in here? Do you have some?
It's done. The people are hearing it right now.
Oh, listen
Thanks.
To that.
Well
oh,
done,
you hear
sir.
It, guys?
Well
wow.
done.
Do you have any good... Christmas gift recommendations for the gearheads, for the wives who might be listening?
As a matter of fact, funny you mention.
Do you guys have merch?
We do. Yeah,
you have do to. Have
you
merch.
You have to, don't you? Yeah.
I know. I don't. Well, can you make money on merch?
Depends.
It depends. What are you selling? Come on, sell me something right now. I'm ready to buy.
Here we go. As a Porsche enthusiast, we shoot feature-length films, and our first film that we shot was celebrating 50 years of the 911. As a matter of fact, we drove all 8 versions of that, and all the cars came out of Park City, Utah.
It was crazy.
They were all privately owned. And a special Easter egg at the very end, a 2011 GT3 RS 4.0.
Oh, my God.
Which was awesome. Yeah.
The owner said, could you not take it to Mexico and just, you know, give me a copy of the video when you're done? Oh, and keep the shiny side up if you don't mind.
Yeah, it was amazing.
We'd like
found
that.
Car,
the
4.0.
The 4.0.
We call that the 4.0.
Yeah.
Yep. Was it a black one or a white one?
It was black.
Oh, that's
it was spectacular.
One.
And he let us have it for 4 or 5 hours.
Yeah. Oh, my God. You must have been dying.
It was unbelievable.
Yeah.
When you drive
really
that car, it changes your life, and then it hurts you because you realize you don't have one.
Yes.
And then you look
and now they're $375,000 or more.
Say, ooh, they're down. Ooh, they're lower.
You say that,
you've
Spike.
Been shopping.
Yeah. I'm not a 911 guy, and yet that car did that for me still.
It wakes
it's
you
an
up,
amazing
right?
car. Oh, an amazing
yeah.
car, for sure. For sure.
So what did we learn from this film? Mm. Tell me what you learned, because when you drive all of those different variants back to back to back, you get for a minute. And then it leaves your head. But for
well,
a day
that's
or
just
two,
it.
What do you learn? What
you know,
do you learn in that situation?
You could say that each generation of any car should theoretically be better than the last, right? You could just
you'd hope so.
It's going to just keep going and better and better. But there's something about the early cars that we love that really speaks to, you know what? I'm doing everything myself. The car is not thinking for me. It's just I'm driving. It's me and the machine. Probably just like you love the Speedster.
Yes.
It strips away all of that, and I'm just back to this bare bones basic feeling. That's what we search for. And that really comes across, I feel like, in the 911 film. So
right.
That's just one of our
films. So was the 4.0 the one that you really sparked to, or was there anything else in that lineup? Because I imagine it's hard. You know, with examples, you can drive in Porsche. You can drive the same year 911, the same model, and they all feel different. You know what I mean?
Yes, sure.
None of them quite.
Sure, sure.
I've driven, I think, 5 or 6 73 RSs. Every one of them feels different. And they're all the same year.
Yeah, yeah.
Some were restored, some were original, but they're all very, very different personalities. Yeah. Even with Speedsters, you know, we did this Decades of Disruption thing, and I drove this 57 Speedster. Mm-hmm. And didn't feel like a 57 Speedster I had ever driven before. It was like restored. It was a little tight. It didn't quite feel right. But so how do you know you were getting the right experience from the right model?
You know, it didn't matter.
It didn't
to
matter.
To be honest. It was that moment at that time.
Right.
And this is generally what we're feeling. And then go find that for yourself. If that's kind of what you gravitate towards, so that early feeling, or, you know, I love tech. I love the latest cars too. I love whatever is coming, and you know the latest 911s. I love that stuff.
So we can buy this film.
Absolutely.
Available on Amazon. Available on Amazon as a Blu-ray with a bunch of extras. And then if you don't have a Blu-ray player or you want to do the digital thing, it's on Vimeo. You can do the same thing you do on Amazon. You can do rental. You can do, you know, ownership.
Fantastic.
That way. What's funny, Spike, you were talking about Christmas gifts. This makes me laugh every year. Because, of course, you can track how this stuff's being sold. And our 9/11 film's done fairly well over the years. But what's hysterical, from the first year we released it, the film sells pretty well, and everybody you ship it out to is a guy's name until Thanksgiving. And then from Thanksgiving till the end of the year, 90% of the people you're shipping to, it is a woman's name. Because she's on Amazon looking for my dad or my husband loves 9/11. Oh, look, there's a movie about it.
Oh, that's
it. It's really hysterical. It happens every year. We love
it. Yeah, yeah. Well, there are a lot of women, though. If you come to Luftekult, have you been to Luftekult?
Have not yet.
You've got to come to Luftekult.
I keep hearing. Is
it's
it in
weird.
Second or third season,
This
though?
Would be our – I don't know. I say our. It's not my thing. It's Patrick Long's thing. But I think the first one was the tiny one at Dais. Mm-hmm. Then there was the second, third. This would be the fourth, right?
Okay. Fourth. Okay.
Fourth coming up.
It's grown. I've heard about it. You know, the first year I heard about, hey, this thing. What is this thing?
It's really funny because you'll see all the old Porsche guys I've been seeing for about 20 years kind of there, and they're really old, and they're kind of scratching their head going, where did this come from? You know?
This was never a thing, and now it's a thing.
What? There's women here. There's music.
Cool.
There are food
Love
trucks.
It.
Nobody's really criticizing anybody else's car and telling them they've got the wrong mirror on it. They're just
right.
It's a celebration. It's inclusive.
That's
Everybody's
cool.
You know,
it's a different mindset,
like,
too.
That's what we want. That's what we want, you know. It's It's funny. I was at I was having dinner with these guys at Pebble Beach, kind of the old guard, the blue blood of Pebble Beach car guys, and they were, you know, this the guy who runs this auction house, and the guy who runs the Concours, and this judge, and it was very stuffy, and representatives from Ford and everybody else.
Yeah,
and they said, well, you know, it's a table with like 20 people. It's one of those with one conversation.
Oh my god!
You know, if you knew me, you'd know I'm going to kill myself.
That's hard.
I'm having a lot of anxiety, and I might put a gun in my mouth to relieve myself from it because this is weird. I don't know any of these people. Anyway, the topic of the conversation was, how do we bring the kids into this? We're all getting very
interesting.
Old.
Interesting.
Yeah.
And I would look at them and I go, no, you're getting old. I'm not that old. You're getting old.
Yeah, like, speak for yourself, sir.
Exactly. And then the guy would say, well, you know, I've been thinking that maybe we could bring in some of these driving simulator machines for the Concours for these kids.
Scratch that idea.
That way the kids could learn about these cars. And
although you could argue that because of the video game generation.
I said, I have a suggestion. you should go to Lifticult because the kids just don't want to come here.
Yeah.
And they got their own thing happening, and it's much cooler than what you're doing. Come to a Cars and Coffee down in Woodland Hills. Come see that.
You know,
this is a very vibrant community. A lot of them don't have your money, Mr. Moneybags. One guy literally looked like Mr. Monopoly. He was there with
seriously.
I was like, these kids are they're very passionate about building their cars up from scratch. You know, this is a $5,000 or less, $2,500 or less, you know.
Yeah.
They are there. They're just not going to come here.
Yeah.
Right?
Making it inclusive and getting
accessible.
Excited about cars in
That's
general,
what it's about.
For sure.
Yeah.
What do you guys, when someone says, you know, I get asked all the time, you know, five grand or less, $2,500 or less.
Oh.
How do I have a good time doing that?
We've considered this a lot because people have asked us the same thing.
Yeah.
But generally, the rule of thumb is, well, if you're going to spend $5,000 or less on a car and then probably have to put $2,000 into maintenance, that's not a $5,000 car. So the discussion is there, although Todd is the great exception to this rule.
Yeah, I found the world's cleanest Mini at $5,000. But back to answer your question, though, the thing that we normally say to people is, you're not looking for a car at $5,000. You're looking for what's available. If you actually have $5,000 in your pocket, start looking your local area, be that Craigslist or whatever, and figuring out, oh, I didn't know. That's how I found a Mini. Oh, I didn't know I could get that for $5,000. How clean is that car?
Yeah.
And start doing due diligence on, like, the one I bought from the original owner. I bought it this summer, an 05 from the original owner. 180,000 miles on it, which sounds crazy, but he kept jacking it up in the winter in his garage on his four-post lift and rebuilding things. It was spotless.
Wow.
But the cars aren't worth anything anymore.
Yeah.
So he sold it at 180,000 miles from I walked into this guy's garage, and it was cleaner than my living room, and I went, I'm buying this car, okay?
Yeah, you can tell instantly,
but it was because I just looked at my local area and went, I'm going to spend about $5,000 on a winter car. What's around? And went, what is that?
Yeah.
That's the way to shop.
Yeah.
It's much harder to go,
right.
Look for this car at $5,000. I don't know if you're going to find that car.
That's exactly how I do it. You know, I'd go to eBay Motors. I always start there because there's just so many cars, and you can just sort everything through a budget. You can go $5,000 top, and I go, look, wow, look at that. Look what just popped up, a pickup truck.
Look what
Ford
you can F-150.
Buy. And that color, are you kidding me? And then you're right. As you zero in, you start to get small. Then you get in the more granular level. You get the model, and then you find the guy who's willing to let it go.
Yeah.
No, that's really good advice. That's really good advice.
I keep telling him it should be the million-mile Mini. Doesn't
that
just roll right off the tongue?
He's
at 200,000 now.
You know, I know
Let's
that Matt Farah thing, the million-mile Lexus.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It, you know, I drove it for a little while. It started to make me anxious because he was what? He was at 900,000 miles and he had to put 100,000 miles.
Exactly.
It's like, that's a lot of miles when you think about it.
Yeah, he's on like 960 now or something. We drove it at like 930.
It'll be great when he gets there, and God bless Matt Farah, but I could never do something like that.
Well,
I need immediate gratification. What's that?
He keeps pouring money into it.
Yeah,
and
he'll be fine.
It's a long-haul thing. I know, but it's a long-haul thing to eventually be able to see those numbers tick over.
It is, and it's going to be a great moment.
It will
when
be,
it happens.
For sure.
And he was smart to kind of loan it out and let people drive it.
Yeah,
but he's got to find that he's got to find that guy who's, you know, commuting 100, 200 miles every day.
And
willing to sit in it.
And willing to sit. I drove it. I liked it. It worked really well.
Yeah.
You know, but, you know, driving a Lexus more than a few minutes for me is difficult. It's very,
we need
very
to move on.
You need to be paid, you're saying?
Yeah, it's
to be able to do that?
No, some of the new stuff, they were going to send me some press cars to drive, and I should give them a fair shake next time. But I'm so hopelessly addicted to performance cars at this point
Sure.
that it gets harder. It's like drug addiction, really. You know, it's hard.
Drugs are cheaper.
Yeah,
let's put it that way.
I want the best heroin. I don't even want heroin. I want the best, the finest, the purest. The one that killed the guy. Yeah, bring me that.
Bring me that.
Bring me the 4GT. Bring me the GT2RS. Bring me stuff that gets my attention immediately.
Yeah.
And you know, otherwise it takes me a little while to get used to a car. What other holiday gifts do you guys recommend?
Well, we've got as a matter of fact, shirts that we actually come up with almost every podcast, a new slogan that could be a shirt. Yeah, well, Todd is actually keeping a running list,
I'll
as a matter of fact.
I'll keep a list because at some point when cooler heads prevail and we aren't in the middle of a podcast, I'll sit down and go, what really works?
But I mean, it's always the spur of the moment. We think it's funny then, maybe looking at it later, not as funny.
You have to reflect. That's the thing. But we do have a few shirts in general, which is fun. Some of the stuff is branded. Some of the stuff is just like we have one right now selling on Blipship that just says Daily Triple, and it just shows a speedometer at 100 miles an hour.
Because one must get their daily triple as their drug injection.
Exactly. I love that.
It's nothing to do with our show specifically. It's just something we talk about a lot. So we have stuff like that. We have other stuff as well. We you know, we have done 4 feature films, so those are all available. The 50 Years of 9/11 was the first one. So we have all of those. And we did one last year for – actually a little over a year ago. We called it Icon. It was all the M3s and the offshoots, so the 1M and the M2. And the BMW community has loved that one. Some people that have always been curious about BMWs have watched that and liked it. That's really cool as well. So we have that stuff. And then there's tons of stuff that we didn't do that's great for car stuff as well. But we're always about the movies and the shirts and stuff are always really cool because you go to the Cars and Coffee and there's always – I feel like you get to see what are the fun, cool car shirts that are here. Forget everyday driver in general. You get to see some guys have got really great ones that are interesting and other guys have got ones where you're like – you didn't have to wear the branding head to toe.
Right.
That's okay.
That's usually the Ferrari guy.
Exactly.
That's the red cap, the red shirt, the red sneakers, and then the little kid with all the red stuff on.
Right.
That's the
Ferrari
most exciting
shot glasses
one.
And
yeah, as well.
Although I will plug the ultimate holiday gift that we can offer, and that is an annual trip to the Nürburgring Nordschleife and Spa-Francorchamps tracks in Belgium as well. So Germany and Belgium, we usually go in the fall. So every year we arrange a trip. We've been there 3 times now, and we've taken a group twice now, so every year. So if you're listening and you want to go to the ring and your wife or husband wants to go.
You just race around and crash like a YouTube video?
No crashing. No crashing involved.
It's an all-inclusive deal. It's cars, gas, instructors, everything.
That's
so
fun.
You have a day on the ring. You have an intermediate day because those tracks are 90 minutes apart.
Yeah, yeah.
The first year we went, we were going as 2 idiots, honestly, just to go, how do you do this?
Yeah,
no
what
idea.
Are we doing? How do we do this?
We had a day we were going to get on the – because the ring's easy. The ring is a toll road. You can drive up on the free time and just pay your toll and drive. Literally, when we were there was side-by-side, going through the toll booth, there was a guy in a purple Volkswagen Polo with a roll cage and a fire suit next to a family in their van, and they were both getting on the ring. And I thought, this place is insane.
So do they stagger anybody at all there? I've never driven it before. They don't stagger it, so you don't know what you might see around a turn at any given moment.
Not at any moment.
And
not
people are crashed at an apex, and hello, you've got to adjust your line.
So there's no flagman out there or anything?
There's corner workers.
They do, but the problem is the track's 13 miles long.
Right.
So it's just the amount of time that it takes for the flags to get going and for people to recognize. So sometimes you'll see these chain reaction wrecks, and that's why, because everybody's going through a fast section and you don't have time to respond.
But we do
a day on the ring.
More dangerous.
We do a road tour
great.
And we do spa. It's amazing.
Great.
It's fantastic. It's
I can't imagine something more dangerous. And I want to go.
Let's go now. Let's go right now. Absolutely. Yep.
That's really our
ultimate holiday gift. So plan now. Start saving now with all the Christmas money that you're going to get, because invariably you get checks from your relatives and grandma and grandpa give you checks, right?
And what do you do at night?
What
do you guys do at night? You hang out at the hotel?
We have great meals. We sit around and talk cars. Some people stay up. Some people go to sleep because you are driving a cool track the next day.
Yeah, yeah.
So it just depends. We've had guys that show up at the ring and they just look woozy. And I'm just thinking, wow, you really should have got a little more sleep last night.
Sure, because you're driving on track. Actually, this year we had dinner cooked and served to us by Sabine Schmitz. So she
really cool.
We went
fun.
To her place,
That's
her ranch,
amazing.
And we had dinner and everybody loved that. And just talk cars, of course. And she came around and served us all schnapps and said, makes you go fast.
That is the ultimate.
So we started downing schnapps.
There you go. So,
that is
what
we can offer.
That's what you want to buy for your gearhead husband, brother, son, or for me, Spike.
There you go, for sure.
And crowdfund
Send
it.
Your donations to.
Right now. Before we go, I want to just hear a little more about your 911 comparison. It's a little irresistible that you drove all of those cars. So which 911s? Specifically, did you drive?
Well, the
did
oldest
you drive
one,
something from 64?
The oldest one was a 67. That's the oldest one we had.
Okay.
We had a 67.
Right.
And the newest
was
one was a
67 911S or 67 just
I think it was an E, as a matter of fact.
Okay.
And it was the short wheelbase.
Yeah.
So we started there, and then the wheelbase grew to the SC and then subsequent generations. And so we could actually see where the lineage of the instrument panel came from and actually feeling that all the way through the lineup.
And the other thing is, the first day we shot this thing, we actually gathered, if you had a 911 and you wanted to come, come. So we had 15 cars first day, even though we were featuring eight.
Right.
So we drove things like a 71 and then this other alternate 73. And so even though the jump in the film is a 67, then a 78, then an 87 – we drove a lot of the intermediate cars on the first day to just kind of get a taste of a lot of things. And then we had our cars we featured. So those old cars are fascinating. I loved that 87. The Carrera was fantastic. Of course, the 993 was great.
I just got one of those. I just bought one of
those. Oh, they're
really?
So fun.
Yeah.
They're
it's so causing year? Me a little heartache, though. It's an 87 911.
It is an 87. Okay.
Beautiful car, silver black, with my co-host who's not here at The Real Zuckerman, who, you know, Zuckerman, you did not do your due diligence on this car. We've been getting all of these.
Yeah,
we're getting hit. We're getting hit left and right. I'm on the ropes.
No.
I'm on the ropes. New windshield.
Oh.
New clutch.
Ooh.
Yesterday was, hey, your right rear wheel is warped. They were trying to balance it. They put needed new tires, of course.
Uh-huh.
We paid top of the market for it, too, and we're now creating a new top of the market. But they said, I've never heard this before. This is really fun because you hear – I do love sorting cars, but I heard a couple things I've never heard before. And one was the wheel is warped and we were trying to balance it and it needed over a pound of weights on it.
Oh my gosh.
To make it.
That's
round.
Frightening.
Oh.
I said, over a pound? Can you do that? And he said, no, we can't do that. So
holy
now
cow.
he goes, we can put new wheels on it. And I said, no, let's see if we can get the wheel fixed. And now we're on the trip. We found a guy very quickly who said, I can fix that wheel.
I was going to say,
I can fix it.
Let's try to fix it before we do anything else. See if that's the right road to
go. But now I'm excited. Now I'm excited because we're going to do the first wheel fix in 25 years of this stupidity.
But you can't tell me it's not worth doing those things to these cars. It is. I feel
of course.
Yeah. I mean, you're creating the new top of the market. Well said, by the way.
Yeah. Well, you know, Zuckerman, my co-host, is he's a lawyer, so he's going to hammer this the salesman after this. He's going to go, look.
Did you not
we
see
can do this,
this
the easy way or the hard way, but you're giving us back some money. Thanks for dropping by, guys.
Thanks
appreciate
a lot.
It.
All right. We'll see you next week on Spike's Car Radio. Hey, guys. It's time to talk about TrueCar. Here are some useful car tips you might not be aware of. A coffee filter and a little bit of olive oil can clean your interior. Removing excess weight from your car will improve gas mileage, and you can place your key fob to your chin to increase its range. Weird, right? Well, here's another tip you also might not know about. TrueCar also helps people get used cars. That's right. TrueCar isn't just for buying new cars. With their certified dealer network and nationwide inventory of nearly 1 million used cars, you'll enjoy real pricing on actual inventory and a simpler buying experience, whether you buy new or used. And with TrueCar, users can see what others paid, so they know if they're getting a good deal before buying. They're also more likely to enjoy a faster buying experience by connecting with TrueCar certified dealers. When you're ready to buy a new or used car, check out TrueCar and enjoy a more confident car buying experience. Some features not available in all states. I'm not telling you which features or which states, but I do love Massachusetts.
Thanks for listening to Spike's Car Radio. Download new episodes every Wednesday on the Podcast One app or subscribe now at Apple Podcasts or PodcastOne.com.